Welcome to Business Watch. A series of major digital security breaches over the last year are serving as a wake-up call to invest in cybersecurity, certainly. Now, pharmacy retailer Dis-Chem has confirmed an investigation into a data breach of 3.6 million people's personal information that was revealed on the 1st of May. Almost a year ago, Transnet was subject to a series of ransomware attacks, shutting down critical port systems. And if your business hasn't been hacked yet, it's not a question of if, but of when it will be. Those who have suffered a breach understand only too well that can cause chaos and certainly how having an incident response plan in place can lessen the fallout. Our companies and corporate boards obviously have to address the cyber risk situation, and to do so, careful planning, assessments and coordinated strategies have to be designed and implemented. And to talk about this, I'm joined now by Johan Steyn, Smart Automation and AI thought leader and recovering management consultant. And I can say that, Johan, because you've only got a couple of weeks left of that, and also chair of the Special Interest Group on AI and Robotics with the Institute of Information Technology Professionals of South Africa. Anna Collard, SVB Content Strategy and Evangelist at KnowBefore, and Carissa Varma, Managing Executive for Cybersecurity at Vodacom. Now, Anna, just tell us a little bit more about yourself and KnowBefore Africa. How did you end up in this field?
So my background is actually in cybersecurity. So I worked for about 10 years at Dimension Data before I started my own business, which was called Popcorn Training. And we were focusing on trying to bring cybersecurity principles across to non-IT or non-technical people in a story-based way. So really using, plain English, some humor, making it more engaging. And we did that like from 2011 onwards, and in fact Old Mutual was one of our very first customers, and in 2017 KnowBefore, which is an American leader in the space, they consider themselves as the leading security culture company, so anything to do with protecting the human factor in cybersecurity, that's what they focused on. They like what we did in South Africa, and they acquired us in 2018, and since then I've been sort of still around, no longer as an operational role, but more on a sort of awareness, kind of spreading the word into Africa and helping both the public as well as our customers and organizations be more aware.
And that awareness, I'm sure, with the various high-profile breaches that we see, we think of the TransUnion breach as well, Dis-Chem most recently, certainly becoming an easier conversation to have, I'm sure, and we'll come back to that. Carissa, how did you end up in the field? Tell us a little bit about your role within Vodacom.
So, Michael, how I ended up in the field is actually a funny story. I thought I wanted to do medicine, realized I don't like touching people, so computers were probably, a better job opportunity for me. Pivoted into cybersecurity. I've spent my entire career in cybersecurity, worked in so many different industries across Africa and globally, telecommunication, banking, finance, government. I've pretty much done everything. I joined Vodacom 6 months ago, and I'm heading up security across all the Vodacom markets. That's a footprint of more than 300 million people across 48 African markets. So quite a big portfolio. We take security very seriously. So doing my best to make sure our customers are safe.
I can imagine as a key backbone in that conversation with everyone now working from home and what we've learned over the last 2 years. Johan, what strikes you about the particular journeys of these two pioneering women in cybersecurity?
It's, as they've both mentioned, Michael, it's becoming such an important topic. It's always been important, but with smart technology and the amount of data we're accessing, it's hugely important. And it's always interesting to hear how people have pivoted their careers, and it's fascinating to hear that our two guests have landed in this field. And Carissa, I've got a vested interest because I'm a Vodacom customer. You guys are harvesting 800 data points on me. please do a good job. But no, Michael, so it just shows you that there's a route for people to take, and it's often not a techie background. It's more a business background that lands people in these kind of roles, which is encouraging, I think.
Yeah, and I want to come back to the human part of this. And, you know, storytelling, I think, is important if you look at how we understand cybersecurity, Anna, but also where the weak points are. It's very often not the technology. It's the social engineering. It's the fact that someone was duped into clicking on a link or getting over that information through very sophisticated social engineering. So how do companies think about approaching beefing up that human component?
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. I mean, I don't like saying, you know, things like the human is the weakest link, because that's actually not true. I think that if you have a team or a staff that is very much aware, and they are, you know, they are actually capable of becoming like an extension of the security team, which is really what we need to do, is create a culture of cybersecurity and making it not just an IT problem or a cybersecurity team's problem. It is something that concerns all of us. And even if it's not only at work, you know, it concerns you at home with your family, etc. Like, our whole lives are online, right? So I often say it's no longer really a tech skill, it's more of a life skill that we have to help people to obtain from a young age, actually. And the way that corporations such as, you know, the ones where Carissa worked, they're doing, like at Vodacom as well as the previous ones I've met her, they're doing fantastic jobs where they have dedicated teams that are responsible purely for the security awareness and the culture within those organizations to help non-technical people to be more conscious of our own human vulnerabilities. Mm. The fact that, you know, social engineers use psychological tricks and manipulation to get us to, you know, sort of shut off our critical thinking, and then we do things, we click on things that we wouldn't usually do. And, you know, to be honest, like, also a funny story, I've been in this field for 20 years, I should really know better, but even I fell 2 weeks ago, I was in an Uber car, and picking up my car, my car was at a service, and while I was in the Uber car, I was talking to the driver. I was also looking outside because it was already dark and a few dodgy characters around. And I was like getting my stuff together and checking my emails at the same time. Bad idea. Because yeah. In that moment, I got an email that looked like it came from Uber, and I clicked on it. And it was, luckily, it was just a, what they call a phishing simulation. It was just a test. But I failed the test. And then as punishment, I had to do the training that I developed myself. So sometimes, it's even when you know better, but when the context is right, when we're multitasking, when we're stressed, we do too many things at the same time, that's when we're vulnerable. And it's exactly that awareness that we want to, you know, teach people to say, well, it's not about, you know, figuring out all the technical intricacies and all the things that can go wrong. It's more about, hey, I'm vulnerable when I'm multitasking. I'm vulnerable when I know I'm stressed, and I should rather take a breather before I react. And I shouldn't do 1 million things at the same time.
Yeah, well, guilty as charged of also trying to multitask. I think we all do so much multitasking now that we're working from home and managing this new way of working. That said, Carissa, how have you seen the evolution of the approach to cybersecurity as we do now have so many more access points as well, from a network perspective, now that we're working from home or the coffee shop, as I do every morning after I've dropped my girls at school? It does increase the risk threat.
Yeah. So I think what's happened with lockdown, it's really exponentially increased our digital demand. We're now doing everything online, from shopping to schooling to absolutely everything, more so than before we all went remote. What this does is it gives attackers an opportunity, a bigger opportunity to dupe all of us. Because we're spending more of our time online, there's a bigger period and window for them to actually attack us and to get us to behave in a way that would give them an opportunity to compromise us. What Anna's talking about that consciousness about cybersecurity, it is becoming almost a basic human right. It's becoming something that everyone needs to know. Whether you're, you know, a grandmother that's using a cell phone for the first time, or you are a teenager getting your first phone, it's absolutely essential that we're having conversations with people about how to protect themselves. It's just like how you would, in South Africa, protect yourself when you're walking on the road. Cyber is becoming the same thing, because the opportunities are so much greater now for us to be attacked.
Johan, are businesses suitably prepared in this regard? And you would look at the headlines over the last 12 months and say, Clearly not, because there's been this rise, this almost exponential rise of big corporates making the headlines for all the wrong news. Our data, personal data, being hacked, leaked, and held ransom.
Yeah. Michael, let me start by telling the story. A few years back, I worked for one of the big four banks. And not far from my desk was this spaceship-looking room with all these screens, and that was where all the cybersecurity people sat. And this is now about 6 years ago. They told me that on a daily basis, they deal with about 300 almost government-size hacks. You know, so, and this is not one of the bigger of the four. So it's been around so long, but I think businesses who maybe are not banks or mobile phone providers, maybe smaller businesses, are not aware of the amount of risk that they have as we increase our digital interaction with customers. Now, if the big boys, so to speak, can be hacked, and we're going to see, I think, a lot more of it, then what about your kind of average size company or your small and medium enterprise? So the awareness, I think, is not there. And maybe to latch on to what both our guests said, it is often only a technology-led engagement to make sure we've got all the antivirus, all those kind of things. But teaching your average worker, if I may say so, about this is very important. It's somebody in the dark room with a thumb drive that causes the trouble. It is what I read, and I can almost not believe it's true about TransUnion, that the password protecting their data was password. You know, so I think as a whole, big and small businesses are not really ready for what's coming our way in the near future.
So how do we improve the culture, that data culture that that you're talking about, Anna? How do we engage our staff in a way that doesn't cause their eyes to glaze over? Well, you have HR to speak to everyone about when they're onboarded. There's that horrible word about the kind of data security protocols in the business. How do you make it engaging?
Yeah, it's really not it's not a technology problem. It's a culture and a more of a HR change management problem. And if we think about behavior change or how people change, it's not very easy. You know, we are lazy. We are social animals. We don't like change. So we have to learn from not the IT field, but from the behavioral scientists and sort of the behavior designers, and take what they've learned and apply that to our culture programs. And there's one quite famous one called BJ Fox. He's like the father of behavior design. And he says in order to change a culture, to get people to change their behavior, you need three things. One, you have to get them motivated. That means you need to be clever and creative in the way you communicate. So it can't be that boring 45 minutes compliance-led training. It needs to be engaging, maybe with a bit of humor. Carissa has done a fantastic job in her previous role where she brought in Riyad Musa as a stand-up comedian, and the two of them had a conversation on stage that was so funny and engaging and educational at the same time. So first one, motivate your users to get them to understand the problem, but also that it's not impossible to solve. Like, we can't just scare the hell out of everyone. Like, you need to give them, you know, practical advice. The second one goes with that. It's ability. So I need motivation and ability. I have to equip people with the tools and the knowledge and the tips on what to do. For example, I can preach until the cow comes home that we need to have unique, strong passwords. Nobody can do that. So give them a password manager. You know, password manager is something that's a plugin in your browser. It's really easy to install. It will take care of all the unique, long, strong passwords for you. Because it's not possible for our brains to remember all of these passwords. And the third one is, so once you've got a motivated person, you've equipped them with the ability, you have to, like, constantly remind them by using nudges or prompts to do the right thing in the right moment. So if you apply those three principles in your program, you know, you're more likely to see change. But it's not something that you do once and then hope for the best. It's like flossing. You know, you have to do that constantly.
absolutely. And I'm with you. I think since the advent of cell phones, but I could remember more than 20 of the old landline numbers. Now I battle to remember outside of the top three cell phone numbers, because we've given away that part of our short-term memory. So to remember a long password, couldn't agree with you more. Carissa, from your vantage point, how do you approach this inside Vodacom? I love that idea of using a comedian to break through what is traditionally seen as something that can be quite staid and eye-glazing.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think what's worked really well is two things. I mean, Anna's spoken about engaging people in a way that's entertaining. And if you think about the one example that Anna gave about using a comedian, I was interviewing a comedian on how to be safe. And obviously the answers were hilarious. And people remembered it. And in the organization, they kept telling their friends, get onto this call and watch this because it's actually very funny. So the draw card was the funny angle. It wasn't the cyber awareness. And we got such a huge coverage, so many people entertained, and it was so long-lasting. People were talking about it in the corridors and sharing the jokes that they had heard in the corridors for months afterwards. And that's the type of culture change you want to see in an organization. The other thing that's worked really well for me is just-in-time sort of nudges. You know, you're just about to go and send out an email. A little pop-up that says, are you sure you want to send this out to an external email address? It contains X, Y, and Z information. When you train someone in a policy, you know, once a year and then it goes away, it's really difficult for that person to remember when they're actually behaving and in a certain situation. So little nudges are hugely powerful in just causing people to just stop and think. And it puts the onus back on the individual. It's not the cybersecurity team sitting in the corner somewhere that's actually protecting the organization. It's me, personally, that's protecting the organization. And I need to stop and think about my behavior before I respond.
Yeah, and what I liked about your earlier example as well, Anna, and that leads to that, those nudges also come in the form of drills. You know, run these kind of drills through your organization to see who's actually been paying attention or who was that individual with their eyes glazing over. Jan, in your consulting work, what are some of the innovative ways that you've come across in terms of companies and the way they're approaching building a cyber security culture? And you know, Warren Buffett said in one of his recent letters that he thinks cybersecurity is probably the number one business threat in the world. It wasn't interest rates or the Fed hiking too soon. It was cybersecurity.
And I fully agree with that, Michael, and the more so as we go into the future and the technology becomes smarter. Because, you know, we can have all the AI kind of weapons to fight intruders, but the intruders also have AI weapons, you know, autonomous kind of weapons to infiltrate our networks. I think it has to, and maybe it connects with what both of our panel have said, it has to start at the bottom. You have to take people on the journey with you. I mean, I've worked for a number of big firms, and you always have to go through all the compliance training. My eyes glaze over, because, and also if you just think a little bit, and it's multiple choice, so you've got a good chance of being of passing it without learning anything. But bring me on the journey. Teach me why it is important, especially if I'm not a techie kind of a person. I work in admin somewhere or whatever. Don't just tell me that these are the rules and you're going to be in trouble if you don't do it. Help me understand why it is important. Also, why it's important for my own life, and I alluded to, you know, our personal devices. So I think that's what I see a lot of companies do. But in most that I still work with, some of the big organizations in our market, it's really pushed from the top, and you better do it or you're not going to get your bonus. And I don't think people understand the reason behind why this is important. So overall, I think there's a lot more organizations can do to make this better, more enjoyable, and to put the importance of it to be realized by all.
Now, I worry about regulation in the conversation, and obviously regulation, I think, is required when you're talking about the quantum of data available, how companies are using this, the Amazons, the Apples of this world. And it's interesting to see how Apple has approached data privacy now and has actually built a certain degree of resilience. It spends less than its big fang peers on lobbying in Washington at the moment, because it's not really too concerned about the regulators coming down on them with a big stick. Here in South Africa, we've had Popea. There are other regulations. I'm always concerned about too much regulation and stifling innovation. How do we strike that balance? Anna, I don't know if you've got a thought on whether or not we've got adequate regulation, too much, too little, and whether or not we're striking that right balance in terms of the broader ecosystem.
I think if we just look at South Africa, the types of regulations that we have are actually really not bad at all. I mean, the Popea Act is sort of, it was very much aligned to what the Data Protection Act was in Europe. And if you comply to that, and from my point of view, obviously I'm coming from the security side, so I'm a little bit biased. My husband would tell you a completely different story because he's in direct marketing. But I feel that it's also both from a business and a sort of risk management point of view, it does make sense to have good compliance in place, because it often drives change where, you know, even though it's the right thing to do, a business owner may not necessarily do it because there's, you know, like it's just extra money they have to spend, they don't see the risk, etc. And that's where compliance does help in getting the conversation or in putting the pressure on and doing the right thing. In terms of our local regulations, I think they're on paper they're really good. I think where we struggle is on the enforcement side.
Yeah.
Like with anything, you know. So yeah, that would be my two cents. Yeah. The rest of the continent, unfortunately, you know, out of 54 countries, only 14 so far have security strategies in place or wow. adequate regulations.
Yeah, so the Wild West out there. And, you know, it is like with so many things in regulatory circles, and when you're talking government about enforcement, and it took a while for the Office of the Information Regulator to be adequately resourced and capacitated. Carissa, from your vantage point at Vodacom, are we getting the balance right?
So I think large corporates are taking this very, very seriously, Michael. If I think about just Vodacom ourselves, in our results, we've said that one of our biggest risks is cybersecurity. So our top risk is cybersecurity. So we're taking it exceptionally seriously, all the way from the board down to every individual in the organization. So I think large corporates get it. If you see some of the reports that are being posted out there, Interpol posted a report recently that said that 10% of Africa's GDP is lost through to cybercrime. And on a continent where we're desperately trying to increase GDP, losing 10% due to cybercrime is staggering. Mm. And it's very much become a discussion not just of theoretics. It's actually things that are happening in our backyard, in our ecosystem, the people that we've worked with. And, you know, no big corporate wants to be that big headline out there. They want to be the person that's got the strong controls, that is doing the due diligence.
Absolutely, because it boils down to trust. And I know we've discussed this several times on the show, Johan. As consumers, we are not going to interact or want to interact with brands who lose our trust, who become that big headline, and we find our personal information leaked out there. Do you think we're getting the balance right?
I think no. I had to think about that, because as opposed to maybe other conversations we've had with guests before, more so than any, this topic of today needs to be a lot more regulated and, again, to Anna's point, enforced. The real penalties, I mean, if you read the POPIA Act and the kind of prison sentences and financial penalties involved, it is quite severe. Even from a director level, and if you don't even know what's happening in your organization. But I haven't really seen the kind of the hammer come down on offenders. So unless that happens, unless there's a real and present danger, if you would, that people will start going to prison if we have these kind of leaks, because you just mentioned three or four leaks earlier in this conversation. Apart from maybe some brand damage, unless I'm mistaken, I don't see any other repercussions. So on this topic today, I think we do need a lot more regulation and important.
Just as we finish off, we've got three minutes to go. The skills issue is another big one. And just the other day, we had Takealot announcing that there just aren't sufficient skills in its e-commerce drive, and cyber is one of those areas. What do we need to do to help improve the overall skills level from the top all the way down to, you know, the most junior of staff, Anna?
Yeah, I look at it as an opportunity, to be honest. I think if we consider that 65% of our youth, like I believe it's between ages of 18 to 25, 65% of them are unemployed. We need to tap into that, you know, that potential and educate them fast. In fact, I mean, and Carissa will also jump in here, but a lot of the people in our industry, we're all involved in sort of side projects where we try and, you know, educate youngsters. I mean, I'm involved with UWC, where they're working on a special course, like a security fundamentals course. The problem is that the tertiary institutions, often also the courses that are currently available, they're too long, they're too old-fashioned. By the time that people come out, they're not, they're just, they're trained in theory and encryption that doesn't help, or cryptography. free. That doesn't necessarily help how to protect an organization. So we need more practical, more on-the-job training. And a lot of that is happening because of the skill shortage. You know, a lot of the banks have academies that they've started because we can't find the people. And as a, like, if you say, you know, as a takeaway, what can you do? Well, if you are involved at all in the tech space, go out there, mentor some young person, get involved with the organizations that are doing something, see how you can help. And also, as particularly girls, you know, like, tell girls about how cool it is to work in this industry and about the opportunities.
I think women in tech are doing amazing things. Ollie Mulder and WeSing Code, I know she's not with them anymore, but certainly changing the game. Carissa, from Vodacom's perspective, what are you doing about the skills deficit?
Yeah, so I think there's two points I'd raise. I think most of the countries we operate in, a lot of people have lost jobs over the last, over COVID. A lot of businesses have closed down, et cetera. Cybersecurity is such a diverse field, and we need diversity in the field. Anna spoke about, the female-male dynamic, but we need diversity from different backgrounds because our adversaries are so diverse. So we need a diverse workforce to be able to tackle that diverse adversity. And I've had really great successes importing people mid-career into cybersecurity. So I've hired people that are marketing specialists to talk about how do we run awareness campaigns because they understand how to change people's behavior and mindset. Mm. I've hired people out of sort of the army or the military to go and look at tactical defenses, and they're super calm in really high pressurized incidents. So there's so much of opportunity to port people in mid-career. I think the other thing that Anna spoke about is a lot of us are doing a lot to promote people, young people coming into cybersecurity. So I'm also president of Women in Cybersecurity Southern Africa. And what we're trying to do is to encourage women, young women, into cybersecurity and to also make sure that once women join cybersecurity, they have fulfilling careers, because I think a lot of women are still fearful about highly technical roles or very senior roles. And we're seeing very low infiltration in that space. Microsoft released some stats that said only 20% of our cybersecurity staff in South Africa is female. So that's a huge deficit that we need to fix. Wow. A lot of work still to do there.
Yeah, it just reminds me, I've got to stop you there, Carissa, because we have run out of time. But, the Colonial Pipeline hack that happened last year, just a week before, I think, there was an ad in the paper for a cybersecurity manager for that firm. So, companies are still behind this, but there is a big opportunity here to tap into young skills and to bring them into the organization in this field. Thank you so much for your time, Carissa Varma, who is executive for cybersecurity at Vodacom, Johan Steyn, our regular AI thought leader here on Business Watch, and Anna Collard, who's SVP Content Strategy, and she calls herself something of an evangelist. You can see why at Know Before.